Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Want you to know that the mothership has...
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's go.
We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. Thanks so much for being with us, everybody. Happy Thursday to you. Coming up in 20 minutes from now, a forgotten classic. Do you remember the night that Michael Jordan went for 51? Not in a Bulls uniform, in a Wizards one. Yes, you may think of MJ as a wizard, as being out of shape or heavier than normal at the end of his career, no sublime moments like hanging in the air or NBA Finals games like his Chicago days, but he actually did drop 51 one night for the Wizards. We'll go back and talk about that night with the longtime voice of the Wizards who was on the call that evening, Dave Johnson, coming up in 20 minutes. And next hour, we'll do NASCAR with rookie Cole Custer, with a dramatic win four wide at the Kentucky Speedway last weekend. Cole Custer coming up here next hour on the show. But I want to begin with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because if we get a football season this year, they are clearly one of the most interesting teams overall, and certainly the most interesting team that was boring last year. Overnight, the Buccaneers become must-watch television. Because, of course, Tom Brady, but also Gronk. Two former Patriots Hall of Famers, they'll be in Canton one day, teaming up for their retirement with the Buccaneers. You know, just like a story of a lot of New Englanders that end up in Florida for retirement. Brady and Gronk lured to the sun and the beach of Tampa Bay. So here was Gronk, who joined Tiki and Tierney yesterday right here on CBS Sports Radio. Did they have this planned?
No, that actually was really never the case. I mean, as a player, you know, you kind of always wanted to see, you always want to see what it's like, or at least have the opportunity what it's like somewhere else. I've thought of that before. Definitely after playing 9 years in the NFL, and also thought about it as my when I came out of retirement, like, this is an opportunity to go see what it's like somewhere else, to go see what it's like in the NFL on another squad. You know, there's so many players that bounce around on so many different teams. You know, I love my time in New England, no doubt about it, but it was another opportunity that presented. So,
yeah.
And it was a great opportunity. But, no, we never really had an opportunity. We never really ever, you know, talked like
about
that
it.
Ever
yeah.
before.
Gotcha.
That, no, hey, man, we need to go somewhere else. It kind of just happened throughout my retirement, and that him hitting free agency, it kind of just lined up like that.
I don't know if I believe that Tom Brady and Gronk were having secret meetings in New England. Hey, we got to get out of here. Hey, jailbreak. Imagine how fun it would be to be somewhere else. Bill sucks. I don't think it's like that. But I definitely believe that both Brady and Gronk are motivated by the same thing, and that these became two parallel tracks. I think both of them got worn down by Bill. I think both of them knew how great they were, enjoyed the structure, enjoyed the winning, enjoyed the Patriot experience for the most part, because it comes with knowing that you're always playing in big games, you're winning a million games, you've got confetti coming down on you, and that's fun. And both those guys have enjoyed the spoils of that. But both those guys became exhausted and taxed by the end by Bill and by the Patriot way and by being consistently pressed upon by Bill. And this is the live by the sword, die by the sword of Bill Belichick. That by pressing on you every day, by challenging you every day, by making you accountable every single minute of every single day, it gets the most out of you, but it is exhausting. And at some point in time, it breaks you. And I don't think that it's coincidental that all of these former Patriots players, after they're done and they go into broadcasting or they're retired, talk about how great all of the winning was, but that the joy in playing football kind of became lacking. And you don't often hear them talk about the joy. You oftentimes hear them talk about the winning. And I think that a lot of these players got into playing football for the joy of it. They got into playing football because they loved it. And they get to the NFL and it becomes a job. And at the very least, if it's going to be a job, at least let me win if it's going to be a job. And so the Teddy Bruschis and the Randy Mosses, the Rodney Harrisons, and the Willie McGinnists, and all of these guys that became analysts and became vocal pieces of the Patriots dynasty, they're proud to be a Patriot because they're proud of the winning. And I think they had a lot of tight bonds there. But a joy from playing for the Patriots, well, that joy comes from the winning. And I think it just breaks guys. I think it just, at some point you go, I've already won. I've got a career. I've got a legacy. Can I go somewhere where the joy is? And I think for both Brady and Gronk, they lined up here. I think both those guys felt this way. Look, there's no doubt in my mind that part of the reason Gronk went to wrestle, part of the reason Gronk retired was that he was sick and tired of Bill's stuff. He was sick and tired of the Bill thing. Certainly part of it is his body. Certainly part of it might just be exhaustion from putting your body through that. But look, set your watch to it. He's out of the game for a minute. Suddenly Brady wants him to be in Florida catching passes and Bruce Arians is concocting a really wacky offense. And suddenly his body feels great and he's able to come back again. I mean, Gronk retired partially because of Bill. I don't think in any way, shape, or form, Gronk is coming out of retirement to go play for Bill Belichick. That seems pretty obvious. And I don't think there was really any want by Tom Brady to return to the Patriots. I think he felt it was time. And this is why I always said I don't blame either side in the divorce of Brady from the Patriots. Neither one. Both of them had maxed out on each other. I don't blame the Patriots for moving on. I don't think you're going to see a 4,000-yard or 5,000-yard passer from Tom Brady this year. I don't think you're going to see him slinging it all over the lot. I don't think you're going to see the Buccaneers at 11-5 and in the playoffs going to the NFC Championship game. I think you'll see at times a Tom Brady that looks like old Tom Brady and at times look like, you know, a washed up Tom Brady. Like there's going to be classic Tom Brady and there's going to be ugly Tom Brady this year. And the Patriots were betting on moving away and out of that instead of overpaying for that. And I don't blame them at all. And for Tom, he had maxed out on Bill. It was just over. He just didn't want to keep going through that. Bill presses on you. Bill is a guy that's difficult to play for. And you know, ultimately you get the winning and you get the accountability and you get the structure. And that's a great thing in New England for a lot of these guys. But for Tom, he wanted to actually have some joy in it, and it was gone. I mean, you see Bill's temperament. I mean, it is certainly not happy-go-lucky. That's who he is all the time. So Brady wanted to move on and could get a $50 million deal, a $60 million deal. Hey, he was going to take it, and he wasn't going to get it from New England. And I don't blame him for taking that either. But Brady and Gronk share one very similar trait. They were done with Bill Belichick. They wanted to keep playing football, but they were done with Bill Belichick. And so do I think that they corroborated behind the scenes, oh, let's get out of here, let's team up somewhere else, let's do this, let's do that. No, I don't think it went that way. I think Gronk is telling the truth here, just kind of lined up. But what lined up was both of them winking, nodding, and being like, yeah, we're over this Bill thing. Let's go somewhere else. Hey, if I went here, would you come? Hey, if I signed here and we could figure it out, would you come out of retirement? That's, I think, how it went down. You can't tell me that suddenly Brady's not picking up the phone and gauging Gronk's potential of coming back. I mean, Brady's going to Tampa Bay whether Gronk's there or not, but once he's decided to go to Tampa Bay, I'm sure his first phone call is going to Gronk saying, hey, what do you think about the Buccaneers? What do you think about Arians' offense? If they could clear some cap space. My guess is that Tom already had conversations with Bruce Arians and with the front office there in Jason Light and asking, hey, if I could get Gronk, would you want him? Again, I don't think that's a make or break of him signing in Tampa Bay. I don't think he's saying I'm only going to the Buccaneers if they have money for Gronk, if they have space for Gronk. But my guess is, once Brady started looking around, beating the bushes, having eyes for somewhere else, I'm sure he had conversations with that front office. Hey, if I could get Gronk out of retirement, could we make it happen? And it's where we are, and it makes the Buccaneers really, really interesting. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. Mraz, when you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this year and you look at the combination of Gronk and Brady, when do you think they first started kicking around the idea of playing together somewhere else? Not necessarily in Tampa Bay, but when do you think they started having conversations of playing somewhere besides New England?
I mean, it's hard to pinpoint a year. It was definitely in that locker room, and my guess would be it was probably after a couple days or a really bad day where Belichick was grinding them into the ground in practice and both of them well aware of their superstar status and all-time great status. Probably, who knows, went out to dinner, texted, said, man, one day, like that dream, you know, one day we're going to do this without Bill. We're going to go somewhere else without Bill. And maybe it was tongue-in-cheek and maybe they thought maybe it never actually will happen. But my point is probably Belichick grinded them so hard that they had many moments like that. And I'm sure it happened over the last couple of years, you know, as their careers or Gronk's career continued to dwindle. I don't know that they necessarily or think that they necessarily said Tampa Bay is the place we have to be, but I'm sure it was always kind of a, you know, a hat tip that one day we're going to show Bill he didn't need to grind us into the ground and we're going to get it done without him. And, you know, it's hard to pinpoint a date, but it had to have happened after a practice, a rough game where Belichick was riding them and they felt like there's no need for those two icons to be made an example of.
I really hope we get an NFL season because I really want to see what Brady does this year. Because if we don't have an NFL season and we spin it forward another year later and he's 44 years old, I mean, forget it. I don't expect anything from a 44-year-old Tom Brady that hasn't played football in a calendar year. But if we get Brady this year, I think it's interesting. If we don't get Brady this year, I think it's toast. Going into 2021, I don't have much interest in seeing what Tom Brady has left over.
Yeah, and that would be the real criminal for Tampa Bay Buccaneer fans who have been longing to get back to the postseason, haven't been there since 2007, to have this Brady come, who I'm not expecting big things anyway, but I'm sure they're excited for it. And if there was no football season and then basically get 44-year-old Tom Brady who can't move the year after would be just the ultimate slap in the face of a rush of excitement and then nothing to pay off for it if you're a Buck fan.
He turns 43 on August 3rd, so he'll be 43 when this season rolls around.
He's cooked.
He's under contract for next year as well with the Buccaneers, but 44-year-old Tom Brady, who hadn't played football since January 2020, trying to come back and play football in September of 2021. I don't think that's going to be pretty. I think he needs this season to at least keep in some type of timing mode. I mean, I think a lot of guys do, but for 43 going on 44 years old, you're right. What a crash and burn it would be emotionally for Buccaneers fans that finally get to care about their team and then would lose this season and have to come back for 44-year-old Tom Brady after a year and a half off. And also for the NFL that scheduled all of the primetime games around Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Every single one of them, it seemingly, is going to be played in a big window. The NFL wants this season played as well because every one of those games are interesting. But how about Brady having finally this chance to play outside of Bill's shadow and having to do it likely without fans in attendance as well? That's crazy. Also weird.
Completely crazy. And I will also say, if there is no season, the one thing I'm least looking forward to is the overcompensating workout videos from Tom Brady proving that he'll still have it at 44, because we will get those rammed down our throats on Instagram if there's no football season, showing how much Tom Brady's staying in shape and ready for 2021.
Boy, I'm hoping there's an NFL season because there's a lot of juicy storylines surrounding it. When we come back, we will play a little game of Forgotten Classics. Do you remember when the greatest basketball player ever dropped 51 for the Wizards? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Before they were legends.
Brady, Brady, wide open, touchdown. Jermaine Wiggins.
Little smoke and mirrors here.
Before a running feed on Twitter.
And that is it. I never thought I would broadcast a game with this many points.
There were games that are only remembered by those who were there.
And there it is, base hit. Back to Mark Tompkins. Here comes Lofton. Here comes the throw. Deep. And Cleveland has won it.
A team coming from a 12-run deficit to win a game.
It's the Forgotten Classics, dusted off the shelves by the DA Show.
That's how it sounded on December the 29th, 2001, when at the age of 38 years old, Michael Jordan, in his first season with the Wizards, dropped 51 points on who else but the Charlotte Hornets. So before he owned the Hornets, he owned the Hornets. 51 points at the age of 38 on the call that night, as he has been on Wizards games for 23 seasons. Our next guest in Forgotten Classics, the voice of the Wizards, Dave Johnson. Dave, good morning.
Hey, good morning. And that's, every time I hear that, I just remember what a magical time, not just that game, but that period of time was for the Wizards franchise. And he may have been 38. It didn't matter the age. Michael Jordan, and he's still this way, I'm sure, is just it's competitive as you can possibly get. He and everyone says this, and I'll go ahead and add my name to the list, the most competitive person I've ever been around.
Okay, so give us that context. What made it so magical with that time and Michael in a Wizards uniform?
Well, think about what we're going through in this country at that time. 9/11 had happened. In fact, I was on the air the morning that 9/11 happened, and the lead story in Washington, D.C. on September 11th, 2001, was that Michael Jordan was indeed coming back to play for the Washington Wizards. He had spent a year as an executive with the Washington Wizards, and now there have been months of speculation, and this has been bubbling, that Michael was actually going to play for the Wizards. It was a beautiful morning, as many people remember seeing those images of the East Coast of the United States on September 11th, 2001. And we were just simply giddy on September 11th. We were talking about Michael Jordan is really going to play here in our town, Washington, D.C. needless to say, that giddiness sharply and dramatically changed about 9 o'clock in the morning, and that was no longer, and sadly, the lead story. The first game of that season, though, we played in New York, and that was another sign of hope as we were coming back. And now Michael Jordan was selling out every game at home, and the Wizards were coming off a 19. That's a 19-win season. He scores that many points in a first quarter. So it was not a very good year, to say the least, the year before. And it's working. And there's that excitement that he's still got it. There may have been some rust, but that rust is coming off. But no one could have foreseen a 51-point night against the Charlotte Hornets on December 29th, because just two nights earlier, he had the worst game of his career and only scored 6 points. So that added to the magic and mystique, maybe, of Michael Jordan.
Dave Johnson, longtime voice of the Wizards, takes us back. Thursday mornings, we do Forgotten Classics, games that you may not remember, but you should. Michael Jordan's 51 points as a Wizard when he was 38 years old. Do you think those two events were interconnected, that Michael had the worst game of his career, 6 points, and then wanted to show everybody he still got it with 51 two nights later?
Well, yes, and that's why when I say that, like everyone, I say he's the most competitive person, that is a compliment. And, you know, we've heard the stories about him creating adversarial situations to help motivate him. You know, that player said that about me, but even if that player didn't say that about him, he would just get fired up so he could take on the opponent. But in this case, he didn't have to make up anything. This was a game against the Pacers when he only scored 6 points, and quite frankly, people were waiting for. Yeah, he can play okay, and he's 38, and he can do this for a while, but there's going to be a time we'll see signs that he's done, that it's finished. So there is no question in my mind, and it was our reaction at the time that we didn't think 51 was coming the next night, but as Doug Collins, the head coach at the time, pointed out that, you know, do you think Michael Jordan has a little pride in his craft and what he does? He was embarrassed by only scoring 6 points in a game against the Indiana Pacers, so he was going to come back. Now, again, Michael Jordan is about what? Winning. He was not going to come back and say, I'm going to get 51 points, or I'm going to get mine, and the heck with the rest of you all, and I don't care if we win or lose. I just want to fill my stat sheet. No, the Wizards also won that night, 107-90, so that was also part of it. But, you know, did it increase his focus? Did it spur him? Yes, no question about it in my mind.
I recently rewatched this game, and if you thought that perhaps Michael gets to 51 by slashing to the basket and dunking the basketball, a classic vintage MJ, maybe you thought he was hitting a bunch of threes. No, it's almost all mid-range jumpers. I mean, almost everything is mid-range jumpers. How much did Michael's game adjust in his two seasons with the Wizards from what we knew him for in Chicago?
He could still fly, but he was not in the air as often as we remember from those periods in Chicago. And that's the exact point, and that's another, you know, reason to applaud his greatness and why he's a great player. It's like, all right, I my body tells me maybe I can't do some of the things I could do even 3 or 4 years ago. But I'm that's the thing about great players is as they get older, maybe the body ages, but the mind does too, and it ages in a positive way. You could argue they become a smarter player. And certainly that was the other thing about Michael Jordan, obviously, is as I remember of that period of time that he was playing. Again, when I talk about pride for Michael Jordan, it was pride because he respected the game. He could tell you about every player that he had to play against in the NBA, weaknesses and tendencies. So he didn't get by on, you know, some supernatural talent. He was a student of not only his game, but opponents' games. All right, this is who's going to be guarding me. This is potential matchups tonight. How can I be effective against them? And because of also physical limitations at the age of 38, you're not going to fly and glide through the air and do windmill dunks all night long. So you have to find other ways. And by the way, again, I think it needs to be appreciated. He was able to score 51 points and do what he did with a Wizards team that was not that deep and not that talented around him. So there was even more focus on him. The other leading scorer that night was a wonderful guy, a wonderful player, Hubert Davis, who had 21 points. But he was not surrounded by, and this is not to be disparaging any of the other players, but he was not surrounded by a cast of all-stars. So not only did he have to change how he played the game, but also under increased pressure because he was not playing with a championship team. He was playing with a team that was young and still trying to move forward.
Longtime voice of the Wizards, Dave Johnson, helps us remember Michael's 51 as a member of the Wizards in 2001. Two of my favorite stats about this game. He shoots 21 to 38. He goes 9 of 10 from the line, but he only took two threes and missed them both. He was 0 for 2 from beyond the arc. So all of his work to get to 51 were ones and twos. And the second stat that I love, he was pulled from the game with 3 minutes to play to a standing ovation. He could have had 55. He could have had 56 or 57. He had time left. When, as you were calling this game, did you realize, oh, we got a special night in our hands?
You know, it was probably in the second half. I mean, because I don't remember, you know, he had an incredible, or maybe it was the second quarter, because he had an amazing first quarter, as I recall. But, you know, we've all seen performances by a number of great players where, you know, you could have a good half or whatever, but you might not be able to sustain that for the full 48 minutes or however many minutes you played. But, you know, there was certainly a lot of buzz at halftime that, wow, you know, he's got a 30-point game going and, you know, he's probably going to get the 40. But again, as you pointed out, we didn't, using the math, we didn't think, all right, he's going to easily get the 50 in the second half because he's just jacking up threes and the threes are going in. And so you're, because it's ones and twos and some like 9 or 10 free throws or whatever, you're not expecting necessarily it's going to reach 50. Then as that second half continued, or they got going and continued, and it was clear that he was not done for the night, you realize, wow, you know, let's pull out the record book. Is he going to break Earl Monroe's franchise record of 56 points? But again, he was pulled from the game. The game was in hand. This was not Michael Jordan's testimonial farewell game or coronation. It was his response to a 6-point effort two nights earlier. But it was also getting the Wizards back in the win column above 500. And actually, you know, it was part of when I talked at the beginning of this conversation about Magical Run, it continued into January and February. And at the All-Star break of that season, the Wizards were on a 5-game winning streak in 26 and 25. And there was every belief that the Wizards could be a playoff team with Michael Jordan at that point.
Well, I want to talk about that as well, because after hitting 51 points in this game, Michael had proved he still got it. And when you look at that season, he averaged nearly 23 points in the 60 games he played that season. But a lot of people kind of dismiss his Wizards years and forget about them. I mean, let's face it, even The Last Dance didn't even mention his Wizards years. Were those Wizards games that he played better and more memorable than people outside of D.C. give him and it credit for?
You know, probably so. I mean, I think, you know, I personally wasn't, it didn't bother me that his time with the Wizards was not included in The Last Dance, because I think the to me anyway, and everybody can have their own opinion, The Last Dance was in context. It was The Last Dance for the Chicago Bulls. And so while they brought up previous seasons of the Bulls, that was also in context with that last season in 97-98. I think that had Michael Jordan been able to really stay healthy for both of those seasons, and you know, you look back, he actually, you know, didn't miss that many games. But again, for the Wizards to make the playoffs in either of those seasons, you really needed a Michael Jordan not to miss much time at all, because he was definitely the to use the cliche, the straw that stirred everything. So I think because of that, you know, you don't make the playoffs, it's quickly forgotten, and that's That's why I think a lot of people forget that time. And also, the journey with the team did not continue as originally anticipated. He had the year as an executive and a couple seasons as a player. But it produced so many great memories for this franchise, this town. I think a lot also, though, as you look back on time, the Wizards have moved on as a franchise. He has moved on and now owns the team that he scored, as you said, and had that great line that he owned the team first and then he owned the team again, the Charlotte Hornets. So, I think I remember, I still see him to this day every now and then. He's still so gracious and so professional. He saw me at a distance as I was walking out of the game in Charlotte, and he didn't have to, and he comes up and says hello to me. I did not have a close relationship. I'm not pretending that, but he remembered who I was and knew what I did with the team. And so he was just, that's the other thing that strikes me. There's so many great memories from what he did on the court, the 51 points, but it's just the way he conducted himself and the way he dealt with everybody in the franchise that he came in contact with. And to me, that is also a mark of a true champion.
Dave Johnson, 23 seasons and counting as the voice of the Wizards, taking us back to 2001 when MJ still had it, 51 points against the Hornets. Dave, this has been a lot of fun to go back and think about that game and think about that night. I really appreciate the time this morning. Thanks so much for doing it with us.
Well, and thanks for taking me back. And again, by the way, that's something I always treasure, being able to call games like the one we just talked about.
We got basketball coming back. That's a good thing as well, huh?
Oh, yeah. We're ready. Well, I'm excited about it. And I think it's a good thing. I think, we're all dealing with a tough thing in this country. If we can find a safely way to do things, we should try. And that's part of our spirit.
Friday, July the 31st, Wizards and Suns. I'm sure you're working on your chart as we speak.
Yeah, I'm working on the chart for the scrimmage games.
Great stuff. Thanks so much, Dave.
All the best.
You too. Dave Johnson joining us, longtime voice of the Wizards. That is very cool. Every Thursday we do Forgotten Classics, games that you might not remember, but you should. MJ's 51. It's a fun watch on YouTube as well. I went back and watched it recently, and I said, boy, this is a lot of fun. I don't even remember MJ hitting 50 with the Wizards. Standing by with our headlines this morning is a kind sir, update anchor extraordinaire Andrew Bogish. AB, take it away.
DA, there's no doubt how good Aaron Judge is at baseball, but these are the facts. He has only played one full season so far in the big leagues. Just this year, he's had a mysterious cracked rib and now a mysterious stiff neck. Judge hears you calling him fragile, but disagrees.
Yeah, I'm not really too worried about it. You know, you break a wrist, break a bone in your ribs, from diving, trying to make a play for your pitcher, get hit in the wrist by a pitcher, it's just freak things, but I'm going to keep playing this game hard, and that's all I know.
Judge was back on the field yesterday after missing 3 days with that stiff neck, and to his credit, he hit the second pitch he saw from James Paxton over the center field fence. Mets ace Jacob DeGrom and Cubs first baseman Anthony Rizzo each had back MRIs yesterday. DeGrom's came back clean, so he's day-to-day after an early exit from an intra-squad game with stiffness. Rizzo has some inflammation. He hopes it'll clear for opening day a week from tomorrow. It's official now in Cleveland. Browns defensive end Myles Garrett has a 5-year extension on top of the 2 remaining seasons of his rookie deal. Garrett said to be guaranteed over $100 million, which would be the most ever for a defensive player. As you know by now, no extension for Dak Prescott and 11 others before yesterday's deadline for franchise tag players to sign long-term instead. NFL Network says the last offer for Dak guaranteed him $100 million, including $50 million at signing. Prescott may have even made a last-second push to get something done, but to no avail. Titans running back Derrick Henry did get an extension despite heavy speculation one wasn't coming. It's a 4-year agreement with the Titans that guarantees the league's leading rusher $25.5 million. Jonathan Kuminga is the latest elite prospect to pick the G League's new developmental league over college poops. Kuminga is a 6'8 forward who might be a top 5 pick in the 2021 NBA draft. He says he would have went to Texas Tech to play with his brother without the G League option. Chase Elliott won NASCAR's All-Star Race last night at Bristol Motor Speedway. Up to 30,000 tickets were sold for the event. Estimates have just 20,000 people shouldn't say just, that's still the highest, biggest crowd NASCAR has had in its return. Tiger Woods is playing tournament golf this week for the first time in 5 months. He, Rory McIlroy, and Brooks Koepka have an afternoon tee time. San Jose rallied for a 4-3 win over Vancouver last night at the MLS tourney at Disney. The game winner came in the 8th minute of second half stoppage time. Atlanta United and FC Cincinnati kick off at the top of the hour. And how about this from college football? The NCAA is allowing the University of St. Thomas from St. Paul, Minnesota, to make the immediate jump from D3 to D1. Normally, this is a 12-year process, including a stop at Division II. The Tommies were kicked out of their D3 league because they were too good. They'll eventually play football in the Pioneer League. Most of their sports will play in the Summit. DA, back to you.
Wow, that's a good one. That's a good stat. Thank you, Bogues. Yeah, they are absolutely dominant at their level, and their competition was like, you guys are wrecking everybody all the time, so you got to get out of our conference. I didn't realize they were going to try to jump all the way up to Division One, though. That's insane.
DA, their athletic director, will join us Tuesday morning on the DA show.
All right. Very good. All right. Very cool. Wow. What a story going from D3 to D1 when it usually takes 12 years. That's a great story. All right. Very good. Stick around on Tuesday. We'll have their AD on the show. That's great. When we come back here on the DA show, this date in mothership history, can you say amicably? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Come one, come all, step inside. It's this date in mothership history.
Let's go back to this date last year, July the 16th, 2019, when Mraz stumbled over the word amicably. Let's play the clip.
He was on a little itty-bitty 10-minute podcast that gets played on radio.com. You can listen to him bellyache and bemoan and all that. I pitched the idea about the stupid hot salsa thing to say it's not going to happen from my end. I want to make sure it's not going to happen from your end. And we go over everything, and I really try to force him to Taz and the Moose more since he likes going away. So that's it, all right? Nobody can tell me there's a reinstatement being issued. Nobody can tell me I give in. I can see. No.
But you
None
gave in.
No,
had,
I didn't.
It's you a- had him on side B.
To do a profile. I'm running out of guys. I'm running out.
There's the truth. There it is, right there.
If Bogish, you know, took our job seriously and was with us this week, I would have just done him this morning, but he was busy. He was preoccupied.
This is about you being lazy, being unable to find another guest.
No. Yes and no. If I can't find another guest, there's enough heat in the kitchen. It kills two birds, one stone, and however he could go away.
This is only going to stoke the fires more.
No, it will not. No, it will not.
You just did a profile on him.
And you guys will listen, and you'll understand we leave it amicably, but amicably?
You okay?
What is it? Amicably. Wait, how do you say it? How do you say the word?
Keep trying, please.
Acclimatingy.
Amicably.
Yeah, we left it amicably. And now you guys will understand.
You appeased your mom!
No, my mom could take a freaking lap! My mom ain't gonna listen to permission graded profiles. I don't even know if she knows we do a side.
She's gonna take a lap and listen to permission graded profiles.
No, it's in, it's over. Now we go away. We all the way home.
This is everything Sean is in a nutshell. He threw everything under the bus. The pressure's on, the sweat is pouring off his face, and he just cracked into pressure. I don't get why he went this direction.
Says the guy, by the way, who hasn't been available for a permission graded podcast in 5 months because he's got a schedule he's already got Christmas's schedules out. He's never available to do a permission graded profile, and now I'm the one who's got to eat it.
You want
to
work Christmas?
No, thanks.
There you go. That's where I'm needed. Thanks.
Boy, that was only 1 year ago, but it feels like a lifetime ago. When Mraz was doing permission-granted profiles, where he was doing an interview, a long-form interview on Side B with listeners, with D-Aliens, with members of the family, the cast of thousands of the DA show, we actually had a regular project for Mraz, which kept him somewhat engaged, which is good. We always need to make sure we have some type of cheese out there, because without it, Mraz gets really, really lazy and unambitious. We also
it should be noted, DA, that was another permission granted podcast punishment because we didn't put one out the week you were in London. So that's what led to the profiles.
That's right. That's right. So the punishment was you had to do PGP profiles, and we actually had a task for you to execute. And then in a fit of just getting it done, because easy solutions are the best solutions for you, you took a guy that had been suspended and on the banned list, and you interviewed him, and that opened up a whole new can of worms. And, you know, God bless Pete, because he's absolutely spot on. It might be the most accurate thing Pete has ever said in that moment when he says, this is Mraz in a nutshell. When the pressure gets hot, the pipes break. You know, when the pressure's there, the pipes break. And you had broken, and you could hear it in your voice and your rationale of having interviewed that person as part of PGP.
He's right. But again, the reason I had to do that was because Pete kept being unavailable doing jobs that were alternative to the show.
Don't point your finger at Pete.
No, but that's the truth. It's not a finger point. That's the truth.
We can take everybody in human existence, everybody in the world minus Pete. That was your potential guests that week. That was your potential net of people. Every human being alive minus Pete, and you still want to blame Pete for not being available.
That's right.
No, we were getting near the end of profiles. I had done a Jacob Wilkins. I had done a Dave Shepard. I had gone down the I started after that
roster you went through.
But those were the names you said I should be profiling. And then after that moment where I got called out, I ended up having listeners on. We had a good run of listeners, remember? And that was a lot of fun. But the one I had teed up, I said, this is the week we're going to do Pete. Pete hasn't been on a while. Pete stiffed me. And then to hear Pete criticize me after he stiffed me, I found to be a little egregious. That's all.
First of all, I was probably never asked for that profile. I was not asked by you.
And, you said, quote, can you find somebody else?
Yeah, after like the fifth caller you interviewed and you couldn't find anybody else. So, hey, let's call Pete.
No, that's not true. That's not true. You were taking the scheduling of Thanksgiving in June
amicably
or July very seriously. And you stiffed me. And then I was left out to dry and made look like the bad guy. Story of the DA show.
But you have to admit, I mean, when somebody asks me during pandemic, hey, how's Mraz doing? What do you think an honest answer from me about you should be? Let me ask you for your assessment. How do you think I should answer that question? How is Mraz doing?
Like as in far terms as of my work ethic or like
yeah, in terms of the job? Yes, in terms of the job. Not in terms of your safety, in terms of the job.
I think Mraz has been on the ball. He's gotten me the guests we've wanted.
You don't believe that.
I actually do. I think I've been very productive through this. I absolutely do. I've been here basically day in and day out until I took the vacation. We have been creative. I have I've been really, I think, good with Mothership at the Movies. I think I've been very productive to this show. The epic fails, I found a way to make sure I was doing them from home to take the weight off the guys back there. Yeah, I think I've done a really good job under the circumstances, yes.
You don't think for a moment that your effort level has declined at all during pandemic?
I absolutely don't, because I look at work differently now. I look at work as a release from the garbage I got to deal with at home. Screaming babies, dogs urinating, wife giving me an attitude.
Pete, let me ask you.
Come on.
Sure.
Let me ask you. How do you think I should answer the question when somebody asks me, how is Mraz doing as the producer during pandemic?
Another loaded question. You're really getting me today. I would say very inconclusive. It's a tricky subject for Mraz. I feel like he has done what he can from home, but I don't think the effort level in terms of going to the next level is there.
Mraz saves 3 hours a day via commute. No more commute. Do you think, Pete, that he's putting in three extra hours compared to what he used to do for our show?
No.
Oh, time out.
Absolutely not. Come on.
Time out. That might be true, but we're all saving time on commute who's not going in. Also, I am taking more time out now in the evenings than we used to do because we changed the strategy of topic lists. I'm cutting out of dinner to make sure I sit down, go through stories, and have the show prepared the night before.
Cutting out of
absolutely
dinner.
Absolutely, I'm doing that. And also, when I needed to for equipment the other day, I got my ass up and I went into Manhattan and I took care of business. Right. I have absolutely disability.
You had to do that. You had to do that to have equipment. The bosses said you had to do it.
All right, that's true. I
that
still
did
it.
Optional.
No fight.
That wasn't
Bogus
optional.
Bogus even admitted that he would have put up a fight about it. I didn't put up a fight about it.
Oh, Nelly!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.